be fair to say you thought that was what made your organization unique?
Unique because we didn't have to, we had the ability to kind of communicate among ourselves and not to, and we didn't really need to solicit any assistance from anybody. But we also knew how most people felt about people who weren't welfare. So we just kind of kept to ourselves and kind of pulled things along. And, of course, later on, you know, it got popular when the poverty program came up and people got paid for organizing. Then, you know, it was a whole different kind of situation. Mm-hmm. But
how did that affect your organization?
It didn't. When that happened? It didn't. What it done, it helped them. It helped us all. And we were involved in the countywide organization. Became groups like ASC Mothers sprang up all over the county of Los Angeles. So I worked with the folks who pulled those groups together and made a county, Los Angeles Welfare, County Welfare Rights Organization, which
included
everything, but East LA didn't have nothing organized. I pulled them together myself.
How'd you do that?
Alice Escalante was involved with a doctor. It was a doctor up in the area. He was concerned. He wasn't Spanish, but he was concerned about his own patients. And he had been working with her, and he'd heard about the organization and felt that would be out when he asked me to attend the meeting. The first time I'd ever been to East LA. And I went to East LA, and a lot of folks did speak English, and of course, Alice spoke very well herself. And the doctor was, well, you know, did speak English, but I think he spoke Spanish, because most all of his patients were Spanish. And right away, they started participating in the organization. So they didn't come on until 1968, before they organized.
What kind of early on, like in 63, 64, like if you organized, what sort of activities were you involved in as an organization?
Well, as an organization, we were always involved, and I've always personally been involved in the political process. And then we got to know the heads of the department, which was very good at that time. Ellis P. Murphy was the director of what they call Bureau of Public Assistance then. Same thing. He was the department head, and we got to know some of his deputies. He was John May and Don Osborne and people like that, Gordon Johnson, Chuck Windsor, who now has went on, you know, to some other things. And we had began to work on individual caseloads. Early back in 64.
So how would you do that exactly?
Just like we do it now. Uh-huh. Like folks come in with their cases. We know folks been cut off and what have you. So we no longer had to, like Mr. Garriger did me, call somebody to the Hans office. We had set up a network where we called somebody in the department and got folks to problem solve. The social workers used to hate us. You know, and they really felt that we had gotten too big for our bridges, we never got no argument with them. We talked to social workers, we talked to their bosses, and their bosses would get on their behinds when we made telephone calls. I remember I done a couple of fair hearings, and I'm very proud, this was way back, and I won both cases. One was it became an SSI case, but those days they were called aid to the total disabled. And then I had an AFDC case that how we went before the referee, which was a new to us. We didn't know that was such a thing. And that you had some recourse, and we communicated that to our organization. So that's basically what we did.
And when did you open the office itself?
We had first a little office. We had... Well, as I said, Congressman Diamond paid for it. And then to our official office, because other than that, we always read in my living room and used my home telephone. But officially, that was a little building on 11411 South Central Avenue, owned by a dentist. And so Dr. Hall waited on all dentists. And he had this little building over there, and we were just sitting there. So I asked him for it, and he gave it to me. So we stayed there until we outgrowed it.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually he sold it to somebody else, and they wanted to use it for something. So we stayed there. All until 74, I believe, 75, we moved down on 19th Street. And we outgrew that, so we've been here since 79.
Since 79?
Uh-huh.
Now, the one on, the original one on South Central, wasn't there something else, a little other, right next to it? I have this recollection of there being something else right next door.
Next door, another little building?
Yeah.
Well, we used to be a little church. They turned it into a church, but it was another little building to have our meetings.
Uh-huh. How many people would come to the meetings?
Well, I don't know. We used to do everything at the building, just like we do here. We used to have our parties in it, our fundraisers. We used to have our Popina parties there when Ms. Johnson needed to, after she came, and she really took over the operation of the office. And she kept up with phone bills and water bills and stuff like that. And so we used to have Popina parties, pay the phone bill, have our bake sale. Still children dinners, chicken dinners. That's what we've done for 20 years.
So that's how you supported all the work. And when the money became available for the War on Poverty programs, did any of
we never got any. You know, we got so I put some people to work, but we never got any of that money. Because I didn't really need the money, and I didn't want to be tied to the system. And so we just left our freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And,
And how did it go from the LA ANC Mothers Anonymous to
it kept from LA National to well first as I say we got involved in the countywide organization. And by that time there was a big push in Northern California. A blind social worker named Benny Parrish, who refused to go out on the midnight raids, and they fired him. He was a social worker in Alameda County. They fired him, and he went to court for 3 years, and they finally had to reinstate him and pay him for all his back pay. And during the time that Benny was in trouble, they organized a group of everybody, not recipients, social workers who supported Benny, industry parties and whatever, and they called themselves the Welfare Rights Organization, but it was not of recipients, of fur recipients, it was a movement to support Benny, because a lot of workers didn't want to go on those midnight raids, but the system forced them on it. And so this countywide organization called themselves the Welfare Rights Organization. And of course, by then, the little groups all over the state, with the help of the poverty people, got out and pulled groups together. And a lot of times they have, now the statewide Welfare Rights Organization came out of something called the Federation of the Poor in the state of California. And there were a whole lot of folks involved, other groups, and civil rights groups and organizations throughout the poverty program that pulled together as a statewide body and organized something called Federation of the Poor. Out of that particular federation, we had all kinds of folk in. We, based on the involvement in Alameda County, my involvement with ANC Mothers, and then from there to Los Angeles County Welfare Rights Organization, we pulled out a state of California welfare rights organization. And I always believe that based on what folk thought my ability was to pull ANC Mothers together, they had some feeling that I would qualify for the president of the statewide organization.
And when was the statewide
organization? The statewide organization was organized in 66. about 2 years later. And in the meantime, the poverty program is all over the country now, and they're doing the same thing, pulling out little groups here, little groups there, little groups there. And so in April, it's my birthday, in April in 66, I went to Washington, D.C. There was a group called the Citizens Crusade Against Poverty, and the crusade was sponsored by the big union leader, Walter Ruther, who was killed in the plane crash. He and some of guys pulled this conference together. And they'd heard about the Westminster Association that was in Watts, and they had a youth group in Watts. And then they heard about this woman that organized the welfare recipients in Watts named Johnny Tillman. And they sent guy out from their agency to look for me up, whose name was Norman Cousin. And other groups like the Neighborhood Adult Participation Project and some old people, you had to nominate some folk for to be invited to this conference. And there were several nominations, but when the vote went down, I was nominated to attend this national conference, and I went. And I spoke on the platform where Sergeant Shriver at that time was the director of OEO, and some people out of Chicago, and I met some other people there. And there was a young man who came out of Syracuse, New York, who had been involved in CORE, and which is a civil rights organization, whose name was George Wiley. He was a professor in chemistry. He had been working on with the Crusade Against Poverty. And he heard me and then those other people speak. And about 2 or 3 weeks later, I looked up. I was running. By now, I'm running a campaign headquarters in Watts for a senator. The seat that Senator Dills got now, that was the guy who ran for that seat named Dudley Gray. And I worked for him in the community. And,
so you stayed back in Washington after the conference then?
I stayed in Washington. No. George saw me there. I came home. And while I was running his headquarters for deals for the Senate, for the state senator, a young man walked in the door named Ed Day, introduced himself, and called me by my name, which scared the life out of me. You know, white, blonde haired, blue eyed boy walked in and called me. And he sat down and he talked, and then he said I'd be hearing from him. And sure enough, I did. And by this time, they're putting, we had somebody named Tim Sampson. You ever heard of Tim Sampson? Tim now teaches at California State Department of Social Service, Social Welfare. Tim and some old guys came to the community. They was hot organizers. You know, they want to organize the course. Tim said he just come out of UCLA and thought he was really organizing. So they didn't want to really organize. They wanted to find some folks already doing something. And I wouldn't cooperate. So they found them some more ladies and got them involved. Then these ladies had a planned the conference at USC. Some little building over there, they let us down. And, of course, they had to let us invite us, you know. So what I done was pulled three carpools together of ANC mothers, and we go to the conference, and we take it over. It was understanding. We take it over. They have George Wiley, and the guy that came and visited me, had already put together this small conference in Chicago. So at this meeting at USC, that nobody knew about this meeting, because I hadn't heard about it yet. They suggested that there's going to be this meeting in Chicago, and somebody needed to be sent from this group. So I had the most women, more women there than as an organized body. The rest of the folks were just there, but we hadn't organized. So so they were ready for nomination. So the one lady gets up and nominates this lady out of Venice. And then another lady gets up and nominated me. And then before they could do anything, the lady was nominated first, so I declined in favor of Johnny Tillman. Bam, that was it. The organizer kind of went out of their mind. So I got a chance to go to Chicago. That's where I met George Wiley. And about 12 women from 12 other states were there. And that is the beginning of the National Organization. Of course, this was in 60, August 66. In December of that same year, the statewide organization became a bona fide statewide organization, and I was elected the first president for the state of California, which we got really involved in the political process and in regulations and whatever. And I don't know if you've heard of a girl named Catherine Germany, who headed up our California, our Los Angeles County Welfare Rights Organization. And she was a very smart, she is a very smart young lady, and she's a paralegal professional now, but she really would dig into the laws and into the welfare codes and what have you. So we kind of hung around in Sacramento for quite some time.
And you kept your group, the ANC mothers, still kept
their
ANC
mothers, right? Yeah, we ran here today. This is us right there.
And, but still tied in. Aren't you one of the few groups still alive from the old National Welfare Rights Organization?
Most of the groups across the country that I organize myself still exist in a small group in their own community, in their own city, doing the things for their own people. Most of the groups that was organized, like Whirlwind organizers come in, everything's hot, the issue's hot, organizers leave the group, those parts. That, because I always went in and taught, my teaching was that people, you can do it yourself. You know, you can, an organizer can coach you along and stuff like that, but just got to come from you. Because the organizers are here today and they come tomorrow, and you got to learn how to survive without the organizers. So I think my whole pushing and teaching and motivating is in dependency, regardless to what area you're in. Whether one day I'd like to see all of the young women be able to take care of their own children without waiting for a child. You know, I'd like to see them pay in a good paying job, you know, rehabilitated to get into the job market. What our system have not done so very good job of so far is providing the market for folks to become employed in like they should. And but even then, when I would talk to the recipients around organizing, I always preach and teach independence. See, there's things that you can do yourself in your own community. You know, and it takes time. You don't really have to be in a hurry.
And that's also why you always felt it should be separate and you shouldn't get too tied into, for instance, the poverty programs. And the
I was heavily tied into the poverty programs, but the poverty programs didn't take over our operation because, you see, the poverty programs are gone. We still here on Broadway.
And what did you see, like when the women's movement, the white women's movement began developing, what was your feeling about that and how did you feel? Because I know you did go to the Crenshaw Women's Center and did participate in some of those early things. What was your feeling about the meaning of the women's liberation movement for Black women and for the ANC mothers?
Well, I'm still involved with the women movement to some extent, but I'm always, when I'm invited to come and speak and participate, if I'm not really tired of pushing out, now I really work for the city council, that's where I get
So, and I'm on loan from our office here. And the councilman was has been with the organization since its conception also. So he wasn't always in a position to be a city council. I still say that, go back to the issue of welfare and the women's issue. When I was started traveling around the country in 66, and then I must have stayed out there until 75, constantly going around making meetings, speeches, and what have you. And I found a group of women, non-black women, up in Appalachia and Kentucky. And what those women said to me is, you cannot leave us out. We need help too. It has nothing to do with color of skin. All it has to do with understanding. And so you can have some asinine attitudes from white women toward white poor women. You have the same kind from black women toward poor women.
Okay? Like that church woman.
Like the church woman to kick it off. So so you have the women's situation. Now, what I had a problem with, the middle class organizing of women, that had nothing to do really with color. They still had an attitude. And I think I believe that, and maybe we were in the same situation, we're kind of selfish, you know. And it's kind of like you don't know where you're going to be tomorrow. You know where you are today. And it's really a dangerous situation for you to have an attitude that you're up here and you're going to stay up there. And it's not possible. You can fall. And you can fall very hard, and it really hurts when you've had that kind of attitude. So in some instances, I felt, maybe I could use the word, very sorry for some of the women when they started trying to organize, because they really had a hard time trying to figure out which way they want to go. And I think what I've seen, they've changed many, many, many ideas, many ways, and many organizations that changed their names a bunch of times. And I think the fight is the same. You know. What I'm guilty of doing, I don't like to change until I think I've got something complete. And so I'm still with ANC Mothers and the Welfare Rights Organization because I don't think it's complete. I don't think my life is complete. Even after 20 years, it probably it probably won't be completed when I'm dead and gone.
No, it needs a lot bigger changes to complete that.
Right. I don't think it'll be complete. So I don't like to move too fast. I'm kind of like the blues singer B.B. King. I don't like to make my move too soon. You know, and I think that's what happened to a lot of the women's movement is they were in a hurry to do something. And I guess I can understand that, too, because there had been time when they weren't allowed or didn't have the opportunity to get out, and they were busy taking care of their homes, their children, getting their education, and then a lot of them found out, even though I got this education, it's not going to do me any good. I got to do something over here. And I can imagine that's kind of tough. You spend time in high school, college, working on your degrees, and you end up on a low-paying job. You end up with a divorce, you know, so the husband you married, you're happy, you're thinking. You wake up one day, and he's gone. You wake up, and he's gone, and he didn't leave you no money, and you got to go down here to this place where these lazy shifters folks stay up there. Dang, I know this has got to be nice.
Yeah. Whether I don't know if it was Gloria Steinem or who it was at one point made the comment that every woman is just one little man away from welfare.
Yes, you one step.
Mm-hmm.
Probably welfare.
And I think that's where probably the some of those connections came in.
Right, right. We were invited to work with them, you know, once we went to the United Methodist Women. And they was all the church women. A lot of them had money. They raised money in the church. They gave us some money. I don't think they gave us what they could have given us, but they like to put their money off into something else, and they weren't interested in it. No poor folks, blacks. They also went with, where it come, where we would hit the hardest is when we moved from the street to the ballot box. Now, that's what told our organization as a national organization. 1972, I guess it was an unusual year for us. We got involved in the political process. We had 17 states welfare recipients organized, endorsed George McGovern for president. That had never happened before. Because people don't think that poor folks, especially welfare recipients, is interested in who's doing what. So we had 17 states endorsed George McGovern. We went to Miami, Florida, to the Democratic Convention. We had nerve enough to go send some people to the Republican Convention in August. And by October, I couldn't make payroll in national office. They wanted to put their money in criminal justice. As long as the women in New York City were walking the streets and getting driven over by horses, they would, Catholic Church would give some money, and United Church of God in Christ, they put some of the money in the pot. They quit putting it in there as of 72. Running political conventions. We had ANC mothers, 12 ANC mothers went from Los Angeles to Miami, Florida. And we lived far away. We even had a group in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
We had a group in Alaska. You know, we had some form of organization in our 50 states. Some of them were just committees, but they were aware, and we had communications. Mm-hmm. You know. Now, that's one thing have not been taken away from us.
Mm-hmm.
It's that communication.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I could write a letter to a whole lot of folks. You know.
So you still have the network.
I still got the network.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.